Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Thursday, April 21st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And as a way to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. The wonderful thing, to my way of thinking about it, with that website and what's available, is that you can actually get the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click on the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download from that website a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process, and those audio files serve as a tutorial, if you will, if you're willing to access them over and over again. You can use them to learn how to get the most benefit from these tools. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And if you choose to do any or all of those things, we would be grateful because, number one, we think it'll make your life a better experience for you, and then you'll be generating more positive energy and putting it out into the field of energy that we all live in. And number two, it frequently leads people to have questions or comments or testimonials or even answers or refutations of this work. And that makes it wonderful when you share those with us, makes it easier for us to live into our intention to be of service. And if you have any of that, you can email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And that's an especially good option if you're not able to listen to the show live, but if you're listening through the archives. And when we get those emails, we will address those comments or questions, and then as time allows, we will respond and let you know what day and time approximately we address your questions or comments, or testimonials, and you'll be able to go back and listen to it through the archives. The archives are another wonderful resource for this work. We've been doing this show for over 11 years now. The first 8 years, it was just 1 hour a day, 5 days a week. And for the last 3+ years, it's been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And as I mentioned already, some of those shows have been curated out because they're specifically relevant to the worksheet process or testimonials. And at the same time, there is just lots of value in these discussions and the monologues that have been created over the past 11+ years, and they're available absolutely free. To get them directly, go to the whyagain.org website, whyagain.org, and click on the picture of the microphone, and that will take you directly to the place where you can access the archives of the show. I should mention that another service we provide is that we host Mind Shifters support groups 2 nights a week, and they're available through Zoom. And all of the information about how to do that, there are Tuesdays and Thursday nights from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And all of the information about how to join us for that is available at mindshiftersacademy.org, a separate info page for logging in on Thursday or Tuesday. And today's a Thursday, so there will be a support group tonight. And we'd be happy to have you or anybody that you refer to us join us for that process. And I think that's about all the housekeeping. We have about 52 minutes left to either entertain your comments, questions, answers, or testimonials, or get back into reading and commenting on The Way of Mastery. We're working on Lesson 9. So the call-in number again is 563-999-3581. And if at any time during this call, even if I'm in the middle of discussing Lesson 9 of The Way of Mastery or some recap, we welcome you to raise a hand. Press 1, and it'll put the little icon of a hand up by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. It is a blessing for all of us, a delight every time that happens. And so please remember, even if we start into some portion of a monologue or a discussion or reading with commentary, I welcome the comments, questions, and testimonials, answers, etc. Since the beginning of January, January 10th, we've been going through The Way of Mastery. And I think it's safe to say or fair to say that we've read every chapter 1 through 8 at least twice and had some summary discussions about the content and the value of these lessons. The essence of the message so far, beginning in Lesson 1, is that each of us is creating our experience of life by where we choose to focus our conscious awareness, that our conscious awareness is quite literally the thing that creates our experience of life. And if we focus our conscious awareness on thoughts that generate sadness and bitterness and anger and hurt and resentment and vengeance, then that is exactly what we create. And if we focus our conscious awareness on contentment, gratitude, peace, joy, affection, respect, sensitivity, love, etc., then that's what we experience. That got reinforced very strongly in Lesson 8, where it talks about every thought that we choose to value has a powerful creative effect for us. And so when we choose thoughts, it's like dropping a pebble into a still, clear pool. And whatever the quality of that pebble is, that begins to generate our experience of life. So the very strong recommendation is for us to choose wisely, to be vigilant, to choose carefully what we value in terms of thoughts. And this teaching has been very clear about the fact that since all minds are joined, basically any thought that anyone has ever had might float through my mind. And I don't have the ability to stop that from happening. I don't need to stop it from happening. When you might say, well, you know, violent thoughts and you know, inappropriate sexy thoughts and greedy thoughts, I don't want that in my energy, and I don't have any choice about that. I do have choice about what I will value. And that's what we're asked to pay attention to here. Moving on into lesson 9, it says, listen, please, please listen. All events, the flow of life itself, is neutral. Another word for that is good, just as it is. Fine, just as it is. The river is just flowing. The river is running dry. It's just running dry. The river is flooding its banks. It's just flooding its banks. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not right. It's not wrong until a human being labels it as one thing or another. And we are the labeler. We are the awareness, we are the consciousness that labels things and thereby creates our experience of things. And so where we left off yesterday in lesson 9 was on page 111, where it says we are being strongly encouraged to step more and more into the conscious awareness of this process and how we are creating. At the beginning of the third paragraph on that page where we left off, it says, in short, it's time to give up the pretense that we are victims and that we are not creating. It's time to begin viewing yourself from the perspective of an absolute, always-on creator, ceaseless creator. Your mind energy is always on, and it's always going to be creating more of whatever you point it towards. It says, begin looking at exactly what you are creating in each moment of your experience. Bring the quality of childlike innocence to what you actually experience. Not what you're telling people you're experiencing, not what you post on Facebook or Instagram, but bring the quality of childlike innocence to your actual experience of life. It's time to become honest with the effects of the ripples of the rocks or pebbles or thoughts that you have chosen to value or that you have dropped into the field of your awareness. Because in truth, from a certain perspective, this is just being at play in the kingdom. We are free to choose any kind of thoughts we want. We're free to choose violent thoughts. We're free to choose excruciatingly painful grief thoughts. We're free to choose contentment and joy. And from the higher S self, from the awareness, from the seat of the soul perspective, this is just us playing with the creative energy. The next paragraph says, for a creator who understands their infinite power, their power to create, for the creator who understands that it is going on ceaselessly. They are always creating. Whatever they're focusing their thoughts on is creating. That creator understands that the effects are being generated moment to moment to moment to moment, and they will end up making our tomorrows. They will end up being the ingredients, the energies, the substance of our tomorrows. And that creator gladly gives up the energy of denial, gladly moves away from any thoughts of victimhood, gladly, actively watches for thoughts or statements of victimhood and chooses to say, instead of I was a victim of this or that, I experienced this or that, and just feels the energetic difference between claiming your position as a creator and an observer of life, and how different that feels from saying I was a victim of life. So the creator who understands their infinite power to create and who understands that it goes on ceaselessly gladly gives up the energy of denial. And that person, that creator, turns to look upon every moment of their experience that they might discern what choice they have made to bring about the effects they're currently experiencing. And then they wake up and realize that in that moment, they're free to choose again. They're free to choose this as just another moment of witnessing and play and neutrality, or they're free to create the experience of the dream of separation and all of the trauma and the drama that goes with it. The next paragraph says, when a bill comes and your body shakes and you go into contraction and worry simply because there are not enough golden coins in the checkbook to pay for the bill, the person who understands their infinite power to create and understands that it's going on ceaselessly, that person stops and looks upon all that is being experienced in the field of the body, in the emotional body, and in the thoughts that are held in the mind. And they begin to notice how they're viewing the objects around themselves, the world around them. And they do that in order to begin to wonder. And they wonder things like, quote, what must I have dropped into the pool of my mind? What thoughts must I have been valuing and believing were true to create the effect of lack of golden coins? And what is that a thought that I wish to keep dropping into my mind, into the pool of my mind, in this awareness pool? Is that a thought I wish to continue to value, so that I can create the same effect or similar effects in my life again tomorrow? Here is the doorway of wisdom. Please do not create unconsciously and then just walk away. Please learn ceaselessly from your creations. For in this way, you begin the process of dissolving the creation of an unenlightened being, and you begin to build the creation of a Christ here and now in this very moment. And in lesson, several lessons throughout the first eight lessons and now into lesson nine, they're suggesting that birthing the awareness of our connection to the Christ mind, birthing the active conscious presence of the Christ mind within us, is a really good purpose to choose for our experience of life. Is this Susan?
It is. Hi, Dr. Tim. I'm glad you said press one anytime, because I think, well, for me, I haven't wanted to interrupt, and so you made yourself, you made it clear that you're interruptible. And before I forget this, because you just read something that I've heard before, you've read it before, not to see yourself as a victim, but to say, I experienced this. All of a sudden, bingo, it went in. And I just want to say that's so useful right now. I'm doing just doing, you know, that anxiety business in the middle of the night the other night has, I've been doing worksheets and so forth, and it's been complicated, or it's been paradoxical to me to say, I am a victim of this, or this happened that was bad, or this happened and it has caused trauma, and therefore X, Y, Z, whatever it is. It's much more neutral to say I experienced this. It's just releasing of energy to have those words go in there, and can be, those words can replace those other words that were like little roadblocks.
Well, and it, for me, it literally creates a different energetic vibration and experience.
Exactly. I could feel it. I'm sure anybody could, but I mean, it's just, it's wonderful to have that. And then I do have a question that sort of goes with all this, and I've had this question for a long time. The Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery and Albert Einstein, they all say that we're not separate. We are all connected. So if we are all connected, we are at best intuiting or picking up on or feeling things that are going on around us. And depending on how we react, we are in either in denial because we're saying, oh my God, he did this to me and I feel, he caused me to feel this way. It's a very fine line. But on the other hand, I know Michael talks about people who claim to be empaths, and we've talked about this a little, how they are picking up, they say that they're picking up on others' emotions, and some empaths are so sensitive to others' emotions that they actually limit the social interactions that they have, where they go, what movies they watch, whether they watch the news and so forth. It's just confusing to have both ideas at once, that we are picking up on stuff only because we have it resonating in us. Is there a way of do we pick up on stuff without resonating? Can we know things without reacting? Or
yes, yes.
Or
but
having
there's
strong
a difference.
Feelings? Okay.
Well, but there's
okay.
A difference. If I'm having a strong feeling or feel, you know, pushed to respond, that's my stuff.
Okay.
That's different from just noticing that someone else is triggered. Right? So I can be watching one of those nature shows where there's, you know, a hunt going on or some... You're watching a troop of baboons, and one of them gets violent towards another one. And I can recognize the violence. And I can say, oh, you know, if I were acting like that, that would mean I'm angry. But that doesn't mean I'm angry in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if I watch that and I feel angry in me towards the baboon that I see expressing aggression, that's my anger. So it's entirely possible to see agitation, upset, sadness in another person and not have it be mine.
Can I
Go
ahead.
Can I be very what?
Can I be very moved by that? Am I allowed feelings? Where does the line get drawn?
Sure, you're always allowed feelings, and when you have them, please own them. Please understand you're the one who is experiencing them, and then they're yours. This is one of the things that Michael Rice used to say in his early talks, and he kind of mixes it up from time to time and says it slightly differently, but... You know, he's got this tongue-in-cheek thing that says, oh, we've got this really sophisticated test for figuring out if something is, and now the way he says it now is he says, if something is yours, But the way he said it,
yeah,
when I first heard it, that was so much more accurate, was he said, how can I figure out if I'm creating what I'm feeling? If I'm feeling it, I'm creating it. Now, over the years, he's drifted away from saying it that way, and he says, how can you feel out of, how can you figure out if it's yours? Well, if you're feeling it, it's yours. But it's to my way of thinking, the way my mind works and the language I use, it's just more crisp and clear and accurate to say it the way he used to say it, which is, how can I figure out if I'm creating the emotion or the energy I'm feeling? If I'm feeling it, I'm creating it. Now, if I'm aware of it, I'm aware that someone else is triggered or agitated or sad, I can be aware of it and not be creating it because I'm not feeling it in my body. I'm not moved to tears. I'm not moved to anger. I'm not moved to grief. But I can acknowledge that in somebody else. We have science that recognizes there are sets of neurons in our brains. They're called mirror neurons. The whole vagus nerve response is set up so that we can be sensitive to the energies and emotions that we experience in others, from their facial expressions to the energy that's radiating out of their chakras, etc. The thing that Dr. Rice is most often referring to, as I've listened to him over the years, and he says, there is no such thing as an empath, et cetera, is that's a very strong reaction he's having to an experience he's had many times over the years where people have used a label like empath as an excuse to not do their own work, as an excuse to blame whatever they're feeling energetically and emotionally, and then whatever statements they make or actions they take from that, they blame on the person or people or the energies around them. And so I understand his very strong statement in that direction. I don't think it's really accurate. I think that there are a lot of people that are very bright who have had the awareness that they are far more sensitive to emotions and energies than other people, than most of the people around them. And so they've developed that awareness, and they've developed very useful things to help them deal with it. One of them is Judith Orloff, who's written the book Empath Survival Guide and several other books since then.
Right.
But it's been a very useful book for me to refer patients to when they're highly sensitive people. So, you know, what's the absolute truth of it? Is it possible for me to be an empath? I don't know. It's just a word, right? But it's a word that's designed, in some cases, some people use it just as an excuse to take responsibility for what they're feeling. In other cases, like in the book that Judith Orloff wrote, it's a word to help describe a recognized pattern that is clearly not the norm. And there's all kinds of variation in us in terms of sensitivities and proclivities and interests and all that kind of stuff. And so some people, including Judith Orloff, have found it very useful to think about their life experience, the emotions that they feel within themselves, the sensitivities they have to the energies other people are going through, in those terms. And when I read her books, I hear 100% responsibility for what you're feeling. And so I think it's completely compatible with what Dr. Michael Rice is trying to teach. There's nothing in Judith Orloff's books that say, oh, it's okay that you rage at somebody because you're just responding to their anger. She doesn't give people this idea of carte blanche, you're off the hook because you're an empath. She says, take responsibility for what you're feeling. And understand that if you are one of the more highly sensitive people, if your antenna for these energies and emotions is more sensitive than other people, learn how to manage it. Take responsibility for managing it, for being aware of your environment, for learning tips and tricks and tools, breath work, EFT tapping, soaking in the tub at night, you know, giving yourself permission to leave crowded rooms and and agitated spaces, you know, be sensitive to what helps you function well and take proactive
right.
steps from a responsibility perspective to deal with it head on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to give another example, but I'm hearing what you said, and I agree and I get it. There was some news feed this morning, and I'm pretty careful about, you know, how much of the news we do get the New York Times and, you know, a small dose just to get the gist of things. But there was a picture of an animal seen because they have no recourse. It was an animal being pumped by mouth full of some kind of liquid that was a certain kind of poison in order to get some kind of a read on how he was going to react. And the animal was a puppy and he was frightened and so forth. And I just scrolled right past it. It was on the internet somewhere. And I scrolled right past it because it's so hard to look at those things. And I don't want to just stop there and fuss and send a donation maybe or not. But I mean, I have a list of things I want to get done and I don't stop there. And I think, am I in denial about this? Am I just, is this a dehumanizing action to take that I see this and I have an immediate reaction, a gut reaction, it feels unbearable. Now, I've never thought that I was an empath because I've been very stupid about, like, I'll go to a conversation with somebody and I'll talk too much, I'll become unconscious or something like that. So I thought, I'm not in that category, but I do have very strong reactions to some things. And I don't know where that falls in this discussion about empaths. Certainly I have tremendous empathy for that animal and all animals. And then I go into my tailspin of how could people do that to animals and other people and what's the world coming to? And, you know, I get into my catastrophe mode and my favorite miserable and all that stuff. So I just leave it. I don't think I'm in denial because I'm aware that I'm doing that. But do you have any comments of that kind of thing?
Well, the thing that keeps coming to me is that the stories you've told about what happened in your childhood with you killing creatures and not, you know, just it's what you were told to do or it's what was happening and you would do it. And then you load it up as your sensibilities and sensitivities and your awareness increased as you got older, now you're loaded with horrors about the memories of what you did.
Gosh, I don't even remember them.
I
guess I told you about something that I buried.
Something on the shore, something with the fish or different creatures that... Are you not remembering this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I am. Okay, yep. I had totally forgotten. Yep. Stoning.
So what I would say about this, based on this body of knowledge, the first thing I'd say is it's perfectly okay for you to turn away from something that is unpleasant for you. This is not something that's happening right in front of you. There's no call to action for you to intervene. And like if you're at a store and you see a child being abused and you have the wherewithal to intervene, let the truth of life act on you in that moment and respond appropriately. But when you're watching something, there's nothing happening where you can have an impact on it. If you're curious and you want to stay and stare at it, go ahead. If it stirs up discomfort in you, please turn away. There's plenty of other things that will come up in your life that will give you things to work on. So if you have the impulse to turn away, go ahead, turn away. Bless your heart. If you're attuned to this kind of work that Dr. Michael Rice puts out, or, Pierre Pratervand, or what's his name, who does Choose Again, Diedrich Wolzak's work, or Byron Katie's work, if you're tuned into a set of tools that can help you dismantle the energy that got resonated by the interpretation you placed on those images you saw then by all means, pick up the tool and dismantle some of that negative energy. There will be less of it there in your system to get resonated the next time you choose a similar interpretation. So I'm trying to be clear about the fact that the way that's most useful for me to talk about this is that my garbage, my pain, my fear, my sadness, my hurt, my rage gets resonated not by the events that I see, but by the interpretations that I choose and place on those events, by the thoughts, to line up with what the Way of Mastery is saying, by the thoughts that float through my mind that I place a value on. By the pebbles that I throw and continue to throw, to choose to throw into the pool of my awareness.
Yeah.
Does that help? Does that make any sense?
If
I choose an interpretation and I see them doing something with these animals, and my interpretation is, oh, that's horrible, and that resonates pain, fear, or sadness, or rage that I have in me, that I carried with me from some experience, whether it was 10 months ago or 10 decades ago, that's my energy of sadness, fear, anger, hurt, rage, etc. I have access to it. I just became aware of it, and now that I'm aware of it, I could choose to release it, to do some work to release it. I don't have to. Maybe I've got a busy day. Maybe I've got commitments. I've made responsibilities. I can take a breath, turn the television off, and walk off and leave it. It'll come back if it's in me. If it's a negative energy that's creating disruption in my energy field, which will eventually create physical problems, it'll come back. I'll be aware of it later.
I was just thinking that I have a codependent relationship with the whole world, practically. I mean,
that's the truth.
Yeah.
That's the truth. That's what Michael's trying to help us see, what Guy Finley is trying to help us see, what Diedrich Wolzak is trying to help us see, is that we are the ones creating our emotions. And the definition for codependence that Michael uses is, anytime I think or speak as though someone or something outside of me is causing my emotions, I just created a codependent relationship with them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, Dr. Tim, that's good. Please carry on with your reading or whatever, or another caller, because that's a good, very helpful.
I'm glad you think so. You're most welcome and deserving. And here is another caller. Area code 541, is this Celinda?
Yes, it is. I'm still reflecting on your conversation with Susan yesterday or the day before, I can't remember which, and also her comments about progress. And first of all, I really also resonate with your reminding us that it's our experience of what is happening out there that's important, and that we own our experience of it. Thank you. I'm right on the same page with you and with Susan on that. In relation to progress, Susan, when you had a concern about the person who laughed at you because you were making progress, you hoped. I want to go back to page 5 in the Way of Mastery, and where it says, you will discover that on the bottom of the page, you will discover that the pathway of awakening is not a pathway of avoidance, but a pathway of truthfulness, not a pathway of accomplishment and pride, but a pathway of releasing from the consciousness every hope and every wish to be special. You see yourself as having made progress so that you can pound a fist upon the chest and spread the tail feathers. It's a transcendence of the hope of somehow getting God's attention so that he will look upon you and say, oh, you have been such a good person. Yes, we will allow you into the kingdom now. And when I read that, and you read that, Dr. Tim, it really resonated and confirmed for me why I have given up progress, because that's time-bound, and it's also judgment and measurement-bound, and why I have referred to myself as being in a process in the eternal now, which took a lot of pressure off of me, because I realized that progress is about a measuring stick, somebody else's measurement or my measurement of how things ought to be. And that also when I'm triggering, when I'm being triggered by something and my own stuff comes up, I'll go into denial, put it on someone else. If I do that, there is always judgment that is attached to that. Always. I am judging either someone or something out there as not being right, not being as it should be, or I am judging myself in the same way. And I just wanted to share that little insight that I've been building and growing into. Just thought I would share that with you in case it might be helpful in any way.
Well, you're on it. This is one of the main points in this work, is to understand that all judgment is error.
Right.
If lesson 9 says all events are neutral, and then if there is a truth to that, if there's an absolute truth to that, then everything I judge means I'm in error because I'm placing a non-neutral value on something. Which means I've created a dream, a fantasy, an experience within myself that doesn't exist outside of me. And so
go ahead.
The immediate effect of that is to create the dream or the hallucination within me that I'm separate.
And even more than that, or in addition to that, that I am right, that I know how things are. That's my rightness. It's okay for me to say, well, this feels right to me. And I experience, because in the Hebrew, and I suspect the Aramaic as well, to know always meant the actual bodily experience of something. That's why Joseph knew Mary after Jesus was born, according to that metaphor or that story. And so I can say, my experience is that this is right for me, or as I see it. But it's not right for the whole world. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm not sure that it's quite in the same vein that we were just discussing, but yes, that does make sense. And what Michael Rice likes to say is he likes to help people understand the difference between right versus wrong thinking and right versus not right for me. So
yes,
I can say to somebody, listen, bless your heart, maybe that's right for you. I'm not choosing that right now. That doesn't feel right for me right now. And there's a huge difference between that and saying, no, you're wrong. You shouldn't go do that. I know better. And the biggest difference is, you know, some people say, oh, you're just playing with words. It's just semantics. The way that there's a significant difference for me between those two that I can discern is the energy in me that I feel when I'm in judgment versus when I'm in allowing.
I'm much more spacious. I'm much more open when I come from that place. I'm much more accepting and as you said, allowing. Much more autonomous and allowing someone else their autonomy.
Well, and that's all extension after the fact. What I'm talking about is the critical energy shift within me of the tightness and the tension. Right? That happens the minute I judge.
Right, exactly. That's what I mean about being in my own place and having some spaciousness, some room to breathe in, room to be in, for not only the other, but for myself as well.
And the essence of that tension that so many of these teachings call us to be aware of is that I've just created a dream of separation from the flow of life. I've created this belief that I'm different. So
when my arm shakes because I'm afraid to open my mouth and say my truth, when my whole body shakes or I get nervous or I start sweating, that is my tension. That's saying that I am separating myself from that other person and depending on their approval of me before I'm going to open my mouth.
Okay, so let's get accurate with our words. You cannot separate yourself from another person in this way that we're talking about. You can create the dream of separation. You can create the hallucination that you're separated. You can create the fantasy that you're separated or that you're right and they're wrong or that you know this or that. But it is not possible at the level that we're talking about it here. It's not possible for you to be separate from your creator or from any of creation. You are an extension of the creative energy in form and therefore connected to the flow of creative energy. You have awareness, and what you can do with that awareness is quite powerful. There's this infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment and thereby either create the experience of your connection to everyone and everything and bring your conscious awareness to it, or create the dream of separation or the fantasy of separation.
Very good. I will take that one to heart. It's a further refinement for me.
All right. Anything else to add, or should we go back to reading a little bit more of Lesson 9 before we wrap up for today?
Oh, that would be delightful. Thank you.
All right. So Lesson 9, page 112, in the Way of Mastery. The next segment says, the power of your thoughts. Never, ever believe that your thoughts are neutral. I said earlier that events are neutral, but your thoughts are not. For your thoughts, as the creative energy that they are, literally are imbued with the power of creation. They do not create neutrally. That is, every thought reverberates a quality of vibration that spreads out from you, and it touches the shores of manifested reality, and it comes back to you. That is what you experience as the positive and negative events of your life. You're literally creating your experience of life by the mind energy you pour into certain patterns of thought. Now, it's very true, and the book says, please listen carefully to this. It's very true that at any moment, as you go along in your experience, as you experience the reverberation of the choices, the thoughts you've chosen to value, etc., you experience the reverberation the coming back of the ripples you have sent out. In that very moment, please listen carefully to this. It is impossible for you to be a victim of what you have created. Because in each such moment, you remain as perfectly free as you were when you first dropped that thought into your mind, or you chose to value that particular thought or pebble. You remain as perfectly free as you were when you chose to value certain thoughts or make judgments or create the dream of separation in the first place. And you are free to choose how you will experience the effect of that ripple, that energy coming back at you, that unfolding of life energy in the next moment. You're free to choose how you will experience it. The text goes on and says, and if you experience it with complete freedom, complete acceptance and love, the process of forgiveness being active, which will actively dismantle any false perception as it arises. If you experience it with neutrality and innocence, then you literally diffuse the effects of that ripple upon the pool of your consciousness. And in that moment, you become instantly free to begin creating in a new way the ripples that you will experience in the next moment, and the next moment, and the future after that, and the tomorrow after that. And that is why you are never a victim of anyone's creation, especially your own. It's not that life is so complex and that you've created all of these momentums and now you're stuck with them. That's not how this works. In every moment where you get it, where you're conscious, where you're awake, you can stop reacting as if you were a victim. You can experience life from the neutral position. And you can look merely at the ripples that are coming back to you that you have sent out away from yourself, and you can say, for instance, quote, this has come into my field of experience as an awesome mystery. This means that I'm an awesomely powerful being. Therefore, I will look lovingly upon this energy, this ripple, this life experience in this moment. Breathing softly, I can say, yes, I know this needs to play itself out. And as it does so, I'm going to be wise enough to see the transparency of it, to see it as completely neutral, to see the lack of effect that it has on anything related to my true nature. It doesn't change who I am. It doesn't add anything of value to my life, and it can't take anything of value from my life. This is merely an experience called life passing through the field of my awareness. If I look upon it lovingly, if I embrace it, I can transmute it and therefore already be engaged in the process of creating an entirely different kind of vibrational ripple that will create my tomorrows. Close quotes. I added some words in there, but it's essentially the end of that suggested thought process. So this means that while the power of your thoughts are not neutral, the events called the effects of those thoughts can either be neutral or not neutral depending upon how you choose the very primary power of awareness. We are seeking to share with you how infinitely free you truly are. So we'll leave it at there for today. I'll invite a little closing question or comment from either Susan or Cecilia or anybody else who's on the call or in the chat room. 563-999-3581. Susan, did you have something to say?
No, I was muted because I have a loud cat here, but I just wanted to say thanks.
All right. Very good. Blessings. Thank you for the call and the comments. I'll mute you so you can listen into the second half of the show if you'd like. Jeannie Rice texted me and said she's got activities with the family today and she's not going to be here, so she's asked me to play a repeat of a show. I am going to do my best to look that up right now and see if I can't do what she's asked. And as I do that, I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, that energy of creation expressing in form. Everything else is false. And we'll be back again tomorrow. And the second hour is called, it's the title of this audio I'm about to play is called The Power of Responsibility. Blessings.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here with us and honored to be able to move the conversation forward to the next level of understanding these amazing, amazing principles. And I was talking to someone recently that triggered a desire to cover a particular topic on the show, so I want to open that one up. And as I was speaking to someone who was, someone who's been involved in doing their work for many years and is a pretty high-level therapist. And I had responded to a post that they had put up, and they were talking about the idea of something making you feel. Basically, the question was, how did that make you feel? And there's a whole complex of information that goes into creating this thing called perception in the mind, a construct that shows us not necessarily what's true about what's happening in the world, but what's true about what we believe is happening in the world. And because those two things can be very literally diametrically opposed, depending on the language that we use, I just want to bring forward once again a reminder of the power of words. And if you listen to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, he says the power of life and death is in your words. You might remember your mother saying something to you like, as mine did, choose your words carefully. One day you may need to eat them. And there was wisdom in that. And so I want to kind of start out with a basic idea and then develop it from there, just to kind of cover that whole topic. You might want to do a search on YouTube, and there's a TED Talk done by a man named Anil, A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. Anil Seth is a neuroscientist at, if I remember correctly, University of Sussex in England. And what Anil offers to us is the understanding that perception, the world we see, the construct of our mind is nothing more than a construct. It is the mind's best guess based on what's resonated within it, its best guess about what is actually happening outside of it. But they're two different things. Now, the best we can hope from perception is that the information that's used to develop it is true and accurate, and therefore our perception gives us something true about what's happening in the world. But the offering here is, if perception is coming from the mind, that even if everything it tells us about the world of actuality is true, it's still just a reality in our minds. So reality is a construct in the mind. Actuality is what actually happened. If our reality is 100% accurate, it's still just a reality in the mind. It is not what actually happened in the world. And my offering is that you don't have actual life until you are actually interacting with what's actually going on in the world. And I know that's a lot of actualies. But while we're in perception, even if it is accurate, it's not the experience. We're not directly experiencing the energy of what's happening in the actual world. And we have faculties to do that. It's just not the mind that gives that to us. So recognizing that reality is a construct, an important piece of understanding how those constructs are made comes from understanding the power of language in structuring our perception, the world we see. We've talked many times about the Harvard research in the realm of psychology that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening in the brain, the max amount of data that goes into constructing your perception is 9 bits. Very, very tiny fragment of what's moving in your mind, and certainly a much tinier fragment of what's moving in the actuality. The time frame for those numbers of 10,000 bits being measured, 10,000 units of electrical activity being measured, and 9 bits of that, 9 fragments of that being what structures our reality, is about a 25th of a second. And it's been estimated, and I don't know that anyone's ever been able to or could ever actually tell us what the truth of it is, but it's been estimated that in that same time frame, there may be as much as 20 trillion bits of data happening in the actuality, in the actual world that's in front of you. So let's just accept that number. It might be a half of that. It might be 20 times that. I don't know. I don't know that we have a way of measuring it with our, you know, we're kind of like an ant trying to measure the height of that radio tower over there. How do we do that? But let's just go with 20 trillion bits. The mind is kind of like a reducer valve, reduces it down to 10,000 bits. And then the next level of reduction is to our perceptual construct is 9 bits. The key becomes what determines which 9 bits of information your mind selects out of the perhaps 20 trillion or the 10,000. What information does your mind select to that 9-bit construct in your mind? And what directs that process? Well, number one, the driver, the overall driver for that process is goals. And let's talk about this in familiar terms of where there is upset. So you'll notice that unless you're a generally miserable person, you're pretty happy with everybody who's doing everything that you want them to do. Everybody that is in a reasonable way fulfilling all the goals you have for them. And you'll notice that you're only pointing upset at them when they're not fulfilling the goal that you have for them. And our goals, by and large, are formulated out of words. So words instruct the mind what data it is allowed to use to generate its construct, your perception. Words either allow or inhibit certain information from being used. So once you recognize that the only thing that can cause you to feel is an energy that's moving inside of you, You know, aside from cancel the thought, a punch in the nose, feelings are internal. They come from within. Emotions are internal. They come from within. And the words we use to tell our minds how to structure our understanding of what we're feeling are really important, because those words can either inhibit or will allow or will cause the mind to hallucinate information about what's happening and give us either a relatively accurate or a totally false perception. Let's take the person who's in a deep state of somnambulism, a deep hypnotic state. And we've all seen it. This person's standing on the stage. And standing on the stage, words are fed into this person's mind, and hypnosis is nothing but the uncritical acceptance of an idea. An idea fed with words into the mind of the person standing on the stage, the person is hypnotized, and we say to that person, you are now on the bow of a ship. And literally, this person looks down at the stage that a moment before was just the stage, but now that they've uncritically accepted the idea that they're on the bow of a ship, when they look down at the stage, the brain, because the words interrupted the natural flow of information, you know, there's a stage, light energy bounces off of the stage, hits my eye, feeds information to my brain perceives I'm standing on a stage. But if the hypnotist intervenes and says you're standing on the bow of a ship, then literally what the mind does is it produces the hallucination of living on the bow or standing on the bow of a ship. Literally, this person looks at the stage and does not see a stage, but they see the bow of a ship. So that's an hallucinated reality. And if you've ever seen, you know, up close somebody in hypnosis, it's very, very real to them, even though it never happened and it isn't there. It can be very disturbing and upsetting if the hypnotist tells them that's what's going on, or it can be very wonderful and pleasing. If you listen to the ancients, when they said transcend, they weren't saying float off in space somewhere. They were saying put an end to the state of trance. Get out of hypnosis. Most people live most of their lives in a state of hypnosis, in a lie. Perception shows them that the lie is true. Now, there's nothing true about standing on the bow of a ship for the person who's on stage being told by a hypnotist you're standing on the bow of a ship, but that doesn't change the fact that their construct, the mind's construct, shows them standing on the bow of a ship. If I feed incorrect words to my mind will has this ability to turn my words into pictures. You're on the bow of a ship, and sure enough, the mind turns that into pictures. Now, if I speak accurately about, let's say, a painful emotion that I have, then my accurate speech is going to be, well, you know, this event happened in the world, and what that resonated in me was this particular quality of pain. And when I speak those words accurately to my mind, I've given my mind permission to show me that this pain is something that comes from inside of me and belongs to me. But if I speak inaccurate words, and my words are a desire to deny and not own what's happening in me, and I say, you made me really suffer by the hurt you inflicted on me when you did whatever it was that you did, my mind will then generate for me a construct. And remember, when you're looking at 10,000 brain cells firing and only 9 bits of data, you're looking at evidence, and words are the primary thing that give the mind permission to show certain evidence. So when I say to my mind, you really hurt me when you did that, I've said to my mind, mind, structure for me a construct where I get to see that Bill over there is the cause of my hurt. And my mind will literally build me a construct, a 9-bit picture, where I see Bill as the cause of my hurt. And I really will see it and experience it that way. That's the power of words in the evidential mind. And the reason I'm talking about this is, and, you know, as I say, I was interacting with someone who's been involved in this work for some time and is a fairly high-level therapist, but still talking about how did that make you feel. My offering is that we need to give up the fallacy that anything outside of us can cause us to feel anything. Again, aside from a punch in the nose. You get a punch in the nose, you're going to have some, you know, experiences in there. But, you know, we talk to somebody on the phone who's on the other side of the world and we rage at them for causing all this pain in us. It's like, how could somebody on the other side of the world speaking into a little piece of plastic and metal with a glass face on it cause air molecules to move because of the way they vibrate their voice box, and those air molecules cause a little plastic thing called a microphone to vibrate back and forth, and that vibration of the microphone is converted into an electrical frequency that then is inserted into a signal that travels from the other side of the world through the air, through electronic waves, through technology. And there's an antenna just down the road. That frequency is broadcast by that antenna. And I have another little with a glass face on it and a little plastic cone in it called a speaker. And that electrical frequency that came out of that person's mouth on the other side of the world resonates and fires with a similar frequency here in my phone. And I think I hear that person saying words. And I say, your words really upset me. I mean, how silly is it that someone vibrating their voice box on the other side of the world because a little piece of plastic in this thing I call a telephone vibrates, that they caused me to be upset? I mean, it's just pure silliness. So my offering is that giving up that fallacy that anything can cause us to feel anything and recognize that all that the outside world can show us is what's already within us. So if somebody on the other side of the world vibrated their voice box, telephone broadcast a signal, signal's decoded by my phone and comes back to me, I need to recognize that my emotions are a part of perception. And that my emotions are a reflection of something that's going on inside of me. It's an internally generated construct of my mind. If I don't like its effect on me when it moves in me, by telling you that you're the reason I'm experiencing this, I leave a whole step out of what's happening in my mind and in my structure where this energy is stored that I'm feeling the effects of. If you can do me the favor of showing me some sort of emotional pain that I have in me and I can actually own it, then you've given me the opportunity to recognize I've got something stored in me that is causing pain, which means, in effect, it doesn't belong in me. And so now I have the opportunity to heal that. I have the opportunity to remove that. I have the opportunity to forgive that energetic pattern in me, remembering that forgiveness has nothing to do with me letting you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but that forgiveness is a piece of technology with which you go inside yourself and you collapse the world of false perception. And you get to access directly the underlying energy that's stored in you that's causing you to feel. Now, that's a huge blessing, unless you live in denial. And denial leads to deepening disease. And I'm speaking of the specific definition of denial that we've developed in this work, which is whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of something moving inside of me, then I'm in denial. You know, in order to play the blame game, and believe that my lie, that something or someone outside is a cause for what's happening inside of me, I've got to hide the real cause of it from me. I've got to hide the energy that's moving in me and hallucinate a construct that paints for me a picture of a world that shows me that you're the problem, that you're the reason I'm feeling this, rather than the reason I'm feeling this is because it's inside of me. Now, the problem with that whole game of denial, thinking or speaking as though something outside is the cause of what's moving inside, means that each time I enter into denial, I successfully hide the cause of what's really going on. And hiding that is called dissociation. If I dissociate from the cause of something in me, I now no longer have access to that which is moving in me or the cause of that which is moving in me, and I cannot remove it. I cannot apply forgiveness to it because my mind won't show me that it's mine, and therefore I cannot access it directly. I'll always remain in that dissociated state. So I've created now, through denial, through this pretense, through this cultural idea that you're the cause of what's moving in me, I've created an unnatural internal condition. I've created an unconscious mind. And my offering is that we are not designed as human beings to have an unconscious mind. How far are we away from our natural state? Well, if you talk to the psychologist today, they'll tell you that perhaps as much as 90 or 95 or maybe even 98% of what's moving in your mind is unconscious. We're not. So how far are we away from our natural condition? Well, if 98% of what's going on in our minds is unconscious, we're a long way from condition where we're not designed to have anything unconscious in us. We should be able to access and touch into anything that's moving in us at any time. But if we push down that energy through denial, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, you upset me, you disturbed me. When I do that, I'm pushing down and refusing to access what's true in me. Which means I'm going to increase the discomfort wherever that energy is stored in tissue, and because relative to any particular part of my tissue, if it's causing pain, it's causing pain because it's of a disintegrative nature. It's not designed to be there. So when I recognize that this pain is signaling me that there's something inside of me that doesn't belong in me, then I have the opportunity to access, if I'm willing to move out of that unconscious state, and remove what never belonged. The process of removing, of accessing and removing what never belonged in you is called forgiveness. Notice the Greeks turned around and showed us or gave us a totally and completely backward definition of forgiveness, one that's consistent with living in a world of denial. You know, notice how much the world spends in you made me. I'm only upset because of you. It's what you did that disturbed me. So when I refuse to own what's going on in me, what do I have to do? I have to push on it. I have to push it down and push it out of sight. But each time I push it out of sight, I add energy to that pattern. What it does is it assures that it's going to repeat in my life. It's going to give me that why is this happening to me again experience. If you haven't read the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again yet, unfortunately, we can't sell you one because it's out of print. However, you can go to Amazon or eBay, and there are always lots of used copies there. Fortunately, a quarter of a century ago, we spread enough copies of that book around the country that there's still lots of them hanging around in Amazon, eBay, and other used bookstores. or you're welcome to go to our website, whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go there and you click on the book cover, you can go in and download the book in any one of, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 languages. And Jeannie was telling me that we just had someone the other day that's volunteering to translate the book into Polish. So we'll have, hopefully before too long, another language. So the book is there, and it details this, why is this happening to me again game. You know, we're just doing a brief picture of it here. But ultimately, what forgiveness does, it allows me to collapse the world of false perception that's based on the lies I tell myself. Lies like, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me, you upset me, it's your problem. You know, if they're the one with the pain, why am I, or with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Something about that doesn't make sense. Good question to ask yourself. If they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? If you have pain and you think it's somebody else's problem, you've really got a problem. And it's your opportunity to learn to access that energy in yourself and remove its influence from your life. So if I never deal with, if I never remove that energy, then over and over again, someone is going to show up that's going to resonate that in me. Well, why would somebody show up to resonate that in me, Michael? Because that's what governs the world, the law of resonance. It's a law of energy exchange. In its simplest form, if I take a middle C tuning fork and I put it in front of a second middle C tuning fork, I hit that first one on the desk and get it vibrating really hard. I put it in front of the second middle C tuning fork. The second middle C tuning fork starts to move. That's what resonance does. It creates motion. And in the human realm, resonance creates motion towards. Someone's going to show up that matches whatever you hold within you. And the more you try to push it down, the more you put energy into it. You know, I like to use an example of, let's imagine that I've got a 3-foot diameter spring that stands 3 feet high. And here it is on the floor. Can that spring do anything just sitting there on the floor? Can it create motion? Can it go anywhere? No, absolutely not. But what happens if I go over and I push on that spring and lock it down? Now there is potential energy stored in that spring. And what if I push on it again and again and again and again and again, and I spend my whole life saying things like, you made me mad, you made me sad? That language means that you're pushing down that spring in yourself every time you say that or think that. What happens if after decades of that, I take the lock off of that spring and all that potential energy becomes kinetic and bang, it flies off into space? One of the fortunate things I got to do back about 40 years ago, it was over a period of several years, I was invited to speak, to do keynote addresses at a conference called Global Sciences. And one year, a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, absolute sweetheart of a man, genius, was speaking at the conference as well. And what Marcel did, Marcel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM, absolute genius. He's a guy that at the age of 11 invented chemical light. You know, if you go to a football game or what have you, buy a light stick, and it's a plastic tube, and in it there's some glass rods or what have you. Bend it and you break the glass rods inside and the two chemicals mix and all of a sudden it lights up. Marcel invented that at the age of 11. And because his family didn't have the money, he patented it at the age of 11 personally. The only reason that you are able to utilize the computer that you use or the phone that you use is Marcel invented the magnetic coating that allows your hard drive to operate. That's the kind of mind Marcel had. So Marcel, this particular year, brought a thing with him to the conference called a Delaware camera and explained how he had used this camera to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Now, the camera's a little different than your standard camera that, you know, when you click the button, it opens the aperture and light energy comes in and is registered on the photographic plate. Between the lens and the photographic plate, aside from the shutter, there's a tuning mechanism so that you can tune the camera so that only certain energies are picked up when the lens is opened. And they're the energies that reflect onto the photographic plate. If you tune it properly, for instance, and I've seen the pictures, they take a picture of an oak tree, or pardon me, they take a picture of an acorn, and what shows up on the photographic plate. Now, on first thought, most people go, oh, come on, Michael, now isn't that just getting a little ridiculous? It's like, well, if you understand the world and physics and how it works, you know, I'm in a room right now. I'm not listening to one radio station. I don't have the TV turned on. But, you know, invisible to me right now, there are probably 1,000 different television stations and who knows, 10,000 different radio stations that are in this room with me right now. All I need is the decoding mechanism, the tuner, to attune to it, and I can be listening to that station. It's here. Now, my senses say, no, that's ridiculous. I go over and I take a knife and I cut the acorn up into 1,000 pieces and I say, that's ridiculous, oak tree in here. But think about it logically. If you've ever planted an acorn, or if you've planted acorns repeatedly over the years, what you've noticed is that every time you plant an acorn, you get an oak tree. You don't get corn. You don't get a new Mercedes. You don't get a Volkswagen or an apple tree. You get an oak tree. Now, obviously, in the same way that these radio stations and these television stations are in the room with you and I right now, in the oak tree, or pardon me, in the acorn, there has to be the instruction set, the vibratory image, the picture of the oak tree, because every time you put that puppy in the ground and you give it water and you give it light, it turns into an oak tree. Obviously, the instruction set is there if you know how to read it. So now here's Marcel, and he tunes the camera properly, and he can take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think of thought. Now, if there's something in my life that I say, boy, I never want that to happen again, you know, like if I say to you, don't think about the color of your car, what moves in your mind? Through resonance, what moves in your mind is something about the color of your car. If I say, I don't want that to happen to me again, what energetic pattern is moving in me except that? And if these high energy waves are literally moving out from me, is that the creative wave? Is that what motivates somebody to be moving toward me, resonating into my space, and then doing a behavior that maybe they've sworn they would never do again? You know, how many have ever gone into somebody's space totally committed to being loving, caring, nurturing, and all of a sudden found yourself functioning like a mad banshee? It's like, what happened? Why did I go into that fit of rage with them? I was going in there to be gentle and nurturing and supportive. Well, here's what happened. There was a high energy wave emanating from their minds about being abused, and there's a high energy wave in your mind that matched their abuse, and that resonance set up, moved the energy in you of abuse, and perhaps against your own will and choice, took over as you spewed that abuse on that other person. Why did you spew that particular form of abuse? Because it was in you. Why did you spew it on that person? Because they were in resonance with it, and that interchange of energy resonated, activated that in you. And most people live their whole lives never knowing that their relationships are based on matching bags of garbage that people come together to spew, because when that energy moves in us, if we wake up, if we understand the point of this whole presentation I'm doing today, that what's moving inside of you is a reflection of what's moving inside of you, that what you're feeling is a reflection of that which is in you, then by becoming aware that it's in you and acquiring the skill and the tool of forgiveness, removal, you get to remove that disintegrative energy from your structure. And I'd offer that's the purpose of the world. The purpose of the world is to kick you right square in the limitation, to continuously hone in on, through resonance, whatever it is that's killing you and give you the opportunity to forgive it. Because life abhors us being diseased. So when I wake up to what I've shut down in me, what I've denied and dissociated from, I can now choose to move inside myself and find what I've hidden and remove that energy. Strengthen what I've hidden from myself through denial and resistance, the energy field of what I do not ever want to have happen again in my life, by holding that lie, by believing that somebody else causes that in me, then the likelihood of me resonating it into my space increases exponentially. Whenever there's something I refuse to be responsible for that I live in denial and dissociation with, I've set myself up for a repeated occurrence. Basically, the why is this happening to me again experience. Forgiveness is about accessing and removing denied and dissociated content. And that's what we're here in understanding and acquiring the technology. Now, I'm going to offer, you know, this technology has been around for 2,000 years. How quickly did the technology of forgiveness disappear from the earth? Well, there was this guy named Yeshua, and he brought the technology forward. And then there's another guy named Paul who came along a few decades later, never met Yeshua. And this guy Paul is supposed to be a primo teacher of Yeshua's work. You know, he traveled all over, and he was, like, rocking. If you listen to Yeshua, the purpose and the result produced by the actual work that he gave people was they would live as love and they would create a world of peace and health and vitality. Paul says, in a moment of his, I suspect, extreme frustration, why is it the things I would do, I cannot do? And the things I hate are what I do. And this is just a couple of decades after Yeshua put it out there and handed it to people. And Paul did not have a clue how to clean up his own energy field. And so he found himself driven by those internal unconscious dynamics I would offer to do things that he thought were vile, and to be incapable of doing things that he thought were wonderful and that he wanted to be able to do. If it left and disappeared that quickly, and it's been gone for almost 2,000 years, how long do you suppose you're going to have to hang out with it in order to understand it and bring it back? Well, if you've got the background and history in the brain cells, you might be able to do it more quickly than I did. I don't know. Except in 2,000 years, everywhere I've looked, I've never seen anybody who understood the technology. Pardon me. Anybody who's ever formulated it correctly and said, here's precisely how, on a consistent, persistent basis, you can go into your own unconscious mind, access the content that is there that has you doing things you hate, as Paul did, and disables you in doing things that you want to do. Here's the technology. Well, I'll offer that from the time I was introduced to it, I hung out with it full time And I'm talking about full time. I'm talking about 60, 70, 80, 90 hours a week full time. And it took me 35 years to understand what it means and how it's done. I don't know. You could go off on your own. Maybe you'll figure it out in a couple of weeks. All you'll need to do is have brain cells about psychology, psychiatry, brain cells about theology, brain cells about physics, brain cells about physiology, brain cells about neurolinguistics, brain cells about how the brain functions, how the mind functions. That's all you'll have to have is those brain cells, and you'll be able to go, oh, here's what he was teaching 2,000 years ago. But you know, I've looked everywhere and I haven't found one person in 2,000 years that knew how that was done. If you're not using the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website. You can do it live. There's a worksheet, step-by-step process. You can do it live right there on the website. You can print the worksheet off so that you can do it yourself at home. Or if you have a smartphone, into your app store, Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you will be looking at the only forgiveness app in the world, which the genius of Miss Jeannie created. And thank you, sweetie, for all the, I don't even know, thousands of hours you put into understanding and then being able to put that into a format that anybody can pick up and use on a minute's notice. You don't have to spend 35 years. You can pick it up. There's the worksheet. Fill in the blanks, and that's it. Jeannie, I think, was talking about the fact that there was a book club that we did, and she put the video of that. I assume it's in the notes today. It's also on the website. But we took a young lady who knew nothing about forgiveness, and we walked her step by step through that worksheet process right from scratch. She was quite confused and didn't know what end was up with forgiveness. And so we were able to just guide her right through and into it. And she went right into some ancestral dynamics, a memory of her grandmother talking to her about some traumas that were matched the pattern that she was in, that had happened with an ancestor of hers. So, you know, there's an example there. And along with that, there are at least 20 other examples on the website. If you go to whyagain, whyagain.org, you'll see the microphone, click that, and then just drill down into the links that take you to the special radio shows where either Dr. Tim or Jeannie or myself have walked step by step with somebody through the whole forgiveness process. If you really want to understand it, listen to all 20-plus shows. Each one has a different nuance, a different question, a different slant, a different person doing a different piece of work, and each one of them contributes to comprehending how this process works. Start putting the pen to the paper and watch how life changes. I promise if you actually use it on a consistent, persistent basis, you will not end up like Paul, saying things like, why is it the things I hate are what I do and the things I would do I cannot do? You won't be saying that. You will, in a consistent way, as you do your work, you'll be more and more empowered to do and say exactly what you want to do and say, and you'll be freed of the propensity to do and say things that you find yourself being embarrassed about or damaged or hurt. The technology's there. It's free. Go for it. Pass it on to somebody else. Our commitment is to make it available to literally every mind, heart, and being on the planet. Cost-free.
And Michael?
If you, yes, sweetie?
You have a hand up, and we're down to 11 minutes.
Okay, well, let me finish just one more thought or two.
Okay.
So download the app, and there are two different forms. There's a simpler version and then the deeper version of the reality management forgiveness process. Start to use it. Put it to work in your life. And support us. find somebody, you know somebody who's in desperate need of the tools, pass it on to them, inform them about it. Work with it, gain an experience of it, and share the experience with another. And or if it's impacting your life in a positive way, supporting you, go to our website. There's a donate button. Support us. We are doing everything we can do to make this as freely available as possible on a global scale. And aside from a very simple, minimalist type lifestyle, everything that comes in goes into the next project of how can we make this available to more and more people. And join us for the book study, because that's just one more way we're going to be supporting people and putting it to work. So, Miss Jeannie, let's say hello to the hand that's up.
All right. It's area code 610. You are on the air. I believe it's Susan.
Howdy, folks. All right. We're going
well, welcome, young lady.
I have a pile of questions. Michael, that was a great talk. And I have questions.
Thank you.
Starting with a Delaware camera. Yeah, it was good.
Yes.
This is a nitty intellectual question. What
okay.
kind of a picture of the oak tree did it show? Is it a generic oak tree, or is it the literal oak tree that's going to come to life if it's planted properly?
Well, my take would be that it's somewhat like perception, in that the frequency pattern that is in the oak is going to be reflected into a structure that it will ultimately end up becoming. And, you know, it's actually been years since I've seen these pictures, and I think Jeannie's got links on the website if you want to go read more about it. I mean, there's one set of pictures I remember looking at was a picture of a fetus in utero at 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, and 6 months. And you could see the whole developing fetus. All four pictures were taken the same day. Now you say, well, how's that possible?
Holy
well, you know, at day one, does something go into the single cell that's been conceived and say, well, let's see, I need to put instructions in for day two, and then on day two say, oh, I need to put instructions in for day three, and on day 200 does it say, oh, I need to go in and put instructions? No, the instruction set is there; it just unfolds. And so, if you like the television signals in my room, if I turn the television on, I've got the right decoder, I can see what's happening on ABC or NBC or CBS or whatever. And if I have the right decoder, which is what the Delaware camera is, I can see what that, which is in front of the lens, if it's tuned properly, I can see what it's going to become.
Wow, the implications for that, of that are huge. Like, for instance,
monumental.
Do we have our whole selves? Is it imaged right away when we're first conceived, and it shows us as an old person, maybe even a dead person? Or, you know, I mean, I'm not asking you to answer those questions.
Yeah.
My mind's just exploding with all the possibilities.
Well, my take would be that the whole unfolding process is there. Everything that is structured into the single cell at conception is there and available if we have the mechanisms to tune to it. Everything that's ever going to unfold in that person's life, except for if the being wakes up and chooses to originate as we're designed to do, then the being is going to write new information into the structure, and there's going to be a shift and a change. So, you know, at the age of 10, the child who's tapped into what their purpose is, perhaps it's changed their whole physiology. And if you took a picture of them at the age of 10 and compared it to the picture at conception, they'd be two totally and completely different things. And then maybe at the age of 30, you know, what energetic patterns have been added or removed, forgiven, that will change the outcome.
So free will is intact, thank God, and we can actually have an influence on what we become.
Absolutely. We have the ability to reach in, and anything that's structured and programmed, maybe from 20 generations ago, if we know how to access it, which is what first century Aramaic forgiveness empowers us to do, we can access it and throw it out of the structure so it never has to unfold. And if we have our imaging faculty, remember one of the faculties of the soul we talked about in the codependence intensive is the imagination, the ability to image in, to bring in a new frequency that can restructure everything. There's free will.
Oh,
now, of course, kings don't want you to have free will, so they're going to structure us with all kinds of rage and fear and guilt and grief, so we never wake up from it. We stay asleep and follow the program as inserted by the king. You know, you go back into the scriptures, and they talk about kings, and then they say, don't ever form contracts with them. They've been at this too long. They know how to run the game. Don't ever get involved with them, but find the power in you that was called Ruka Dukucha that will, one, when you give permission with your free will to remove what doesn't belong, it will remove what doesn't belong, and then that power will teach you the truth of what's possible for you, will give you a whole new level of understanding, comprehension, capability, and change the game.
Wow. So...
And what if one of the frequencies that's there at conception, which is the frequency of death, what if death is just a frequency that's been put into the structure, and because it's there, we die? What if we learn to remove those death frequencies, those energetic patterns that don't belong, remove that overlay? Then what's possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a very high thought. I understand what you're saying, and I don't think I'm going to be able to do that in my life, but I love the thought and the possibility. Holy mackerel.
And if you insert it into your bloodline, who will in your future bloodline be able to actualize that thought? And will you be resonated right back into the bloodline to continue with the process?
Wow.
You know, I shared that back, probably 6 or 8 months ago. It might even be longer than that now. I don't know. Time flies. But I was doing a still point session, and I had this, I was, you know, my eyes were closed. I'm breathing away, and I'm inclined to point my eyes downward. And what I see is just this vast, unfathomable field of darkness with just throughout it small, tiny lights throughout the whole vast array of darkness and an uncountable number of small lights in that. And what I was told, what I was shown in that moment was that I was looking at my ancestry, and the darkness was the unresolved pain. And the request was, am I willing to be the conduit to access and process out that pain? And I agreed. I said, yes, I will do that. I spoke that to all of my ancestors. And interestingly enough, at the instant literally that I said to all of my ancestors, I literally verbalized that out loud. My phone rang, and it was my son on the phone. Now, I've never had a conversation with my son about ancestry or, you know, grandfathers, nothing in that regard. But literally the instant that I said that out loud in my still point session to my ancestors, I will handle that. The phone rang, and my son was on the phone. He's, Dad, I'm on Ancestry.com, and I need some answers about some of our ancestors. That was pretty good confirmation for me.
That
was, God, that was a pretty powerful confirmation.
Amazing.
It's like, okay, we're on track.
Wow. Okay, that's amazing, and it's too bad we have too little time.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.